and welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with our game week 33 preview, final single game week before a series of doubles. My name is Chris Hopkins, and I am joined by the 99 treble to my 2001 treble. It's Andy Case. Andy, we were just having a quick chat about trebles, weren't we? Just trying to, you know, I guess, think about, you know, Klopp's last season, maybe going out with a treble. And I guess, I mean, I think it's fair enough, you being a Man United fan and obviously, you know, the treble that they won in 99 and indeed the treble that Man City won last year is, I guess, considered the treble because of its the competitions that those clubs won, their superiority over the one that Liverpool won in 2001. But, you know, three trophies in a single season is still an impressive feat nonetheless, isn't it? And they should be given, you know, rightful flowers and rightful kudos.
Well, I mean, you're trying to obviously bait me here, but the answer is no. Yeah, I mean, Jose Mourinho, after Manchester United won the Europa League in 2016, was it? Or 17, famously or infamously held up the three fingers to the camera and tried to get the whole squad to, as they were like lifting the trophy to signify the fact that that was their third trophy that season.
And did that include like the Community Shield or something?
He was including the Community Shield alongside the League Cup and Europa League. So, I mean, three trophies in a season, apparently, Chris. So, you know, it's ridiculous. No, you can't be, you can't be celebrating that.
Well, you can be celebrating it.
You can celebrate winning each trophy individually, but I'm not having you calling it even, to be honest, even calling it a treble. Like you're in some way trying to associate yourself with the treble. It just, I can't, I think it's unacceptable. So, yeah, good luck to Klopp. You know, I think he's, this sounds harsh, but overrated. And I kind of don't mean it in a harsh
way. Here we go.
In a harsh way because I sort of like him and I think he's done well at Liverpool, but he gets so much flowers and credit for, well, you won the league once in 9 years, mate. I mean, yeah, like, and he's very petty in interviews and everyone thinks he's this lovely, nice guy, which most of the time he is, but yeah. He seems to get away with quite a lot. So in terms of outrageous media statements. So yeah.
I guess it's the fact that you've said it rather than if I'd said it that makes it sound more like sour grapes, I guess.
Yeah.
Everyone, yeah. But yeah, I don't entirely disagree with you. I think actually what kind of gets me more about him is, or at least some of the credit he's being given this year is like apparently he's just become a shining example of youth development all of a sudden, which just I find bizarre. You know, I know Liverpool have had to use their squad this year, but like it's not like they've got this incredible academy that just becomes a. Or it doesn't feel like they've got this incredible academy that's you know become. You've got Liverpool youth players appearing across the, you know, across the Premier League or across Europe. You just kind of don't see it. But I mean, I'm sure there are stats that maybe seem to say that he is in. You know, he has done that quite well. And I think you know, scouts that I follow tend to think that he is pretty good at blooding youngsters, even if they don't end up making Liverpool's first team. He's good at kind of using the squad and doing that sort of thing. So yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, it doesn't feel like Klopp is the shining example of giving young players, giving youth a chance sometimes, but maybe I'm being unfair. Obviously he's had a very big impact on the city I now call home. So yeah, I do wonder how much how many tears there will be on the final day of the season. And I'm sure there's not enough like wet floor signs to go around the city centre. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty. I mean, he has, it's one thing to be, you know, like you say, proactively to develop, known for developing youth, and I guess another, to be, you know, when he's had to, he has been willing to, he's not been afraid to chuck in a Connor Bradley or a Curtis Jones or whatever when needed, I suppose. So he's not scared of relying on youth if they're good enough, sort of thing. But yeah.
Yeah, I just like, no one talks about that with Pep Guardiola yet. You know, Phil Foden and Cole Palmer and Rico Lewis and, you know, whoever, Oscar Bob this season, is like, there's examples. And then you've got the ones that go out on loan and play all over Europe. So yeah, it just doesn't, you know, Conor Bradley's done well, but you know, that's calm myself down a little bit. Anyway, enough. Yeah, clearly we are probably not unqualified, but yeah, I guess our bias is about Mr. Klopp maybe come to the fore. So let's move on, Andy. Let's talk about the matter at hand, which is game week 33 of the Premier League season and therefore the FPL season. As always on our previous shows, we'll start by running down the game week fixtures. We'll have a quick chat about this week's talking points. We've got some new and some existing players on the radar to go through, and we will be swimming against the tide at this game week, and then we'll finish, as we always do, with captaincy and a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is That? Let's start then by running down those all-important game week 33 fixtures. Your deadline for this game week 33 is Saturday the 13th of April at 11 o'clock UK time. That's because the lunchtime kickoff is Newcastle hosting Spurs. And then we've got four 3 o'clock kickoffs. They include Brentford and Sheffield United, Burnley playing Brighton, Man City hosting Luton, and Nottingham Forest hosting Wolves.
The evening kickoff on Saturday is Bournemouth versus Man United. And moving on to Sunday, Liverpool versus Palace, West Ham versus Fulham, and Arsenal versus Villa are available. And then on Monday night, the Monday night football, Chelsea versus Everton.
So we've seen a lot of rotation, Andy, this midweek. And in fact, I guess in game week 32 as well, as teams were preparing for this European midweek. Obviously, Arsenal and Man City with two, you know, big games in the Champions League, obviously Liverpool and West Ham playing as we speak, and Villa also in the Conference League. I guess the main kind of rotation that we've seen that's at least notable from the FPL point of view has been from Man City and Liverpool. Man City obviously playing their strongest team, really, I guess, against Real Madrid in midweek, which meant that we saw a slightly weakened side at the weekend, and I think we're anticipating that we're probably going to see that again this weekend. Whereas, and for Liverpool, they rested quite a few starters, including Mo Salah this Thursday evening, although he has had to come on at half time to try and salvage them being behind at half time. I guess also on the Liverpool front, we've got injury news or injury updates from Diego Jota, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and potentially Alisson as well. The former two being on Liverpool's bench tonight, implying that maybe they're back and ready for some minutes. And with Liverpool and Arsenal of those three teams playing in the double game week after game week 33, there's really going to be quite a lot of news and quite a lot of minute monitoring. So managers know how to best maximise that double game week that's on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, as ever with these things, you can only manage them as far as you have the knowledge, which, you know, there's lots of unknowns. So, I guess keep an eye. We would always say keep an eye on what's happened in midweek, because that helps inform you early on. And then, obviously listen to the press conferences. As far as it stands so far, I don't think either Jota or Trent has come off the bench. Salah was originally rested, like you say, and has come on at half time. So hopefully, sounds like he'll be, you know, if nothing untoward happens between now and the end of the game, he should be sort of good to start at the weekend. Yeah, City is always a question with Pep Roulette, but even more so, obviously, after a night like that, a 3-3 in the Bernabeu. Definitely red flags there. And even Arsenal, there's been players with knocks, and the tie is finally poised. So how Arteta deals with it, ultimately they are in a title race too, and you know, Liverpool have been able to deprioritize the Europa League a little bit, whereas City and Arsenal, it is slightly different in that they have to try and play a stronger team really as possible in all of the games. So tougher, I suppose. And yeah, just listen out for the press conferences. Not that they always blink and tell the truth anyway, do they? So
yeah, absolutely. Let's I guess get caught up as well, Andy, on a little bit of FPL news. I'm not sure if we mentioned this on the last pod or even if it had been confirmed, but we've definitely got the Chelsea-Tottenham rearranged game now confirmed for game week 35 rather than 36, which I think was either of those the game could have fit into. So that's definitely now 35. And then we have also had the double game week in 37 confirmed, although I think that was maybe almost like the worst kept secret in Fantasy Premier League. So yeah, we've got guaranteed now fixtures and a clear run through to the end of the season. I guess in terms of strategy, Andy, those that have the free hit chip left, it feels like the game week 34 is the best time to use that. Those that have got a wild card left, maybe well saving that for after this coming double game week in 34 in order to maximise it for 37. But they may also be thinking, I guess, potentially about using it this game week in order to target game week 34 if they have multiple chips left. I guess bench boost, I mean, less said about that the better. I know that you're not the biggest fan of it as a chip, but yeah, I guess that should probably, well, it needs to be used by the end of the season, and I guess if you can take advantage of those double game weeks in some way, shape or form, then that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, I mean, there are but with both Arsenal and Liverpool playing in the upcoming double, perhaps there's if there's a way that you can get to a decent bench boost team this double game week, even that possibly could be good. I know there's a lot of people heading towards free hit, and obviously you cannot use more than one chip in any given game week. So yeah, if you're free hitting, you would not be able to bench boost. But yeah, for some, maybe that'll be an option. And obviously, like again, another quite common strategy is those who aren't free hitting in 34, wildcarding after 34 to if they have that chip left, to kind of try and set themselves up for as good a bench boost as they can in 37, when I think it's six teams that have been confirmed to be doubling. So there's not many game weeks left, so I guess yeah, use your transfers, use your free transfers wisely, because you haven't got many of them anymore.
Yeah, it is just six left. I think basically every team apart from, I was going to say, but every team double at least once apart from Tottenham, but even they double, don't they? So I think most teams do double at least once, but I don't think it is everyone. I'm not sure if Brentford double, looking at some stuff in front of me. So yeah, a few teams that maybe don't. Tottenham also do blank in 34 as well, but yeah, have a double the game week after. I think it's only Chelsea that have more than one double. So yeah, they're worth keeping a bit of an eye on. I think it's also interesting, Andy, that this might be the first run-in that we've done where you and I are on quite different strategies. I think usually we end up, I guess, somewhat herding, or at least having relatively similar approaches to the game. But yeah, at the minute I'm on the free hit 34, and then sort of try and dead end into 37 as best I can. Whereas yeah, you're on the sort of dead end into 34, wildcard 35, and then look the bench boost in 37. So yeah, I think that gives us a bit of breadth, I think, in terms of the radar, which we can come on to now. It does have a pretty similar feel, Andy, to last week. No one on the centre, and two players that were on the mid-range last week remaining there in Luis Diaz and Alexander Isak. I guess what we could add to these is that obviously we've got a little bit more data for Diaz. I thought he was Liverpool's most threatening player, I think, generally against Man United last Sunday. I guess maybe Darwin Nunez could have a claim for that, but I think that Diaz and Nunez looked significantly more threatening than Mohamed Salah did. That is playing out in the underlying numbers. I think last week we said he was second for non-penalty XG in the game. He's now top for non-penalty XG in the game. That, I guess, everything that we've said about him now implies that he should be on the centre of our radar, but I guess there is that Mo Salah question mark. Do you want to double up Liverpool midfielders? Maybe you will for 34, but do you right now? And then with Diogo Jota coming back to fitness, how much of a minutes risk will Diaz be? over the coming game weeks. And I'm not asking you to answer that question, Andy, but that ultimately is the issue of going too hard on this guy in terms of getting him into your team.
Yeah, and as it stands, he's played all of the games so far as we're speaking, about 70, 80 minutes in the Europa League quarterfinal. And given the fact that Liverpool are losing it 2-0 as it stands, you know, they're going to need a relatively strong team in the second leg as well. So what does that mean for his expected minutes in the league? Never mind the fact, obviously, like you say, Jota coming back too. So I think a number of question marks there about rotation, not just in this game week, but an upcoming double too. So definitely that holds him back for me from the centre. But and also maybe slightly, if you've been slightly critical, the output hasn't quite matched the underlying numbers to this point either. But look, I mean, he has in previous times shown us he can do that, and is getting those underlying numbers. I think top is he now in the game for non-penalty XG. He's actually kind of surpassed Salah, or more so Salah's previous game week history when we look at the last six, has sort of dropped off a bit. So yeah, I mean, top in the whole game for non-penalty XG. As you said, he is there or thereabouts getting chances, as demonstrated against that Liverpool team. Although I think you'd get against Man United, you'd get chances, wouldn't you?
As we discussed probably on last week's pod and on several pods before, I don't think I'd be taking any of them.
No, but I mean, you know, the point is that Diaz is in and around in the right areas here, and he might have a slightly better chance of taking some of them. So yeah, I think before this show, I was like, let's not say too much extra on Diaz and Isak, and waft on about one of them right there.
Well, I'm going to start waffing on about Isak now as well a little bit. I guess he to me feels a little bit strategy proof. Obviously, you are going to, you know, those that are on the free here are definitely going to be wanting to bring in, double game week players. But he feels, you know, reasonable for those that are on free hit, I guess, for 34, Crystal Palace away, but obviously some good fixtures after that as well. And yeah, I guess if you're going to be wildcarding at 35, Sheffield United, Burnley, and then a double, including Brighton and Man United, you know, particularly after 35, Andy, those fixtures are really appealing for Alexander Isak. And yeah, he's just a player that I think on the eye just looks really good. But Newcastle do tend to share things around quite a lot, don't they?
Yeah, they can do, although when he's on, he does seem to get a lot of the XG. We did notice last season a pattern where whichever one of Isak or Wilson was on was getting a large chunk of the team's XG. But I mean, if you've heard of white privilege and male privilege, that's definitely free hit privilege coming through there in those comments, because as someone sitting here without the free hit chip to play in 34, I'm going, do I want to play Isak against Spurs? And I mean, I know they've got a high line and stuff, but you know, he doesn't double in 30. I won't be using the free hit chip next week. So is it, you know, for almost 8 million now, is he high up in my thoughts? And probably not. I mean, don't get me wrong, post that when I've got a wild card to use, and you know, I'm looking at Sheffield United, Burnley and a double in 37. Yeah, I mean, high up there for sure. But right at this moment, yeah, I think it is still a little bit strategy dependent.
Yeah, I think I do think that's fair. I just don't think that there's a host of, in the teams that double in 34 that you're trying to bring in using free transfers. There's just not a host of strikers that you're going to be looking at. I guess if you are going to carry a single game week striker, you're probably going to be carrying Erling Haaland over Alexander Isak, and yeah, therefore you only need two doublers in theory. And as we said before, Dominic Solanke's there, Darwin Nunez is there, but otherwise, you're looking at like, you know, an Arsenal forwards. There aren't that many of those. Palace, we might come to in a bit. Everton is a bit of a no. Sheffield United and Wolves. So, you know, is Isak worse than, you know, a Wolves doubler? Probably not. So, you know, it does think about how, I guess it is about how you're going to sort of piece that team together and what free transfers you can use. Let's move outwards to the fringe, Andy, and let's just quickly go over the players that are remaining where they are, and that does include the aforementioned Darwin Nunez. Absolutely stays on the fringe of our radar, but I guess again with Jota coming back, who can play out wide left and also up front in that Darwin Nunez role, potential issues for his expected minutes. And he has come off the bench tonight, Andy. So he's obviously ready for some minutes in this Liverpool team. So, yeah, you know, I guess you'd expect, you know, maybe not a starting berth in game week 33, but maybe he'd be ready to start at least one in 34. And therefore, maybe that does limit Nunes a little bit. David Raya also remaining on the fringe. I guess it would be very rare for us to put a goalkeeper any higher, but we've said plenty about Arsenal's underlying defensive numbers in the last couple of weeks, and he remains the cheapest, the most guaranteed way into Arsenal's defence. But yeah, it doesn't get many bonus points, doesn't get many save points, frankly, because Arsenal just do not concede that many shots. We've got some other players on the fringe, though, Andy, and this first one, I'm trying to think back maybe to like one of the first episodes of the FPL Lounge. I feel like this guy might have been on one of our first radars. I can't remember exactly when we started and when this guy entered the league, but he was definitely very popular in a pre-season, and whether that was the first season we did it or the second, I can't remember. But Kai Havertz has made a reappearance, a long overdue reappearance, onto the fringe of the radar. Reasonable underlying numbers. Started a lot of games recently. Seems to be increasingly trusted by Mikel Arteta. I guess it's just, and I guess he's also the cheapest way into Arsenal's kind of forward line at the moment. He's cheaper than Saka, he's cheaper than Odegaard. I think he's cheaper than Gabriel Jesus, and he's cheaper than Martinelli as well. So there's something about him that definitely appeals. And yeah, Arsenal have a reasonable double on the horizon in 34. So could be worth a flyer.
I mean, yeah, I guess more than a flyer in the sense of, you know, we've put him on the radar, and I don't know so much about long overdue. I'd certainly contest that that statement. But in terms of recent form, I mean, bottom line is 10 attacking returns in his last seven game weeks, has started like most games now for Arsenal this season. As you say, seems to be trusted, and I guess his versatility helps in that he can play on the left, although that doesn't happen very often, but plays as the false nine or one of the two eights in midfield. You know, played both those positions in the Champions League game earlier in midweek. So, yeah, obviously racks up the clean sheet points that Arsenal are gaining as well, six in the last seven game weeks. He's actually got to a point now, Kai Havertz, where he's eighth in the whole game for non-penalty XG over his last six matches. And again, that's because of being either quite an advanced midfielder or the kind of false nine. So he's getting in and around the positions, and he is producing, I guess, the goods ultimately as well with that type of output. So, yeah, I mean, obviously this particular game week, Villa at home, I suppose, or Villa off the back of a Thursday night European game as well. So maybe a little bit of tiredness there from them, but then a double in 34. So, yeah, there'll be people looking. I guess part of the reason he's made it on here is that there will be people, those not with free hits in particular, having to make moves to avoid losing free transfers this week, right? And so even if it's not that you're desperate for Havertz this game week, if you're wanting to maximize the doublers in your side, and you're looking at Arsenal attackers in particular, because they're one of the better teams in this double, and going, well, who can I rely on? And really, the usuals of sort of Jesus and Martinelli, once you've got past Saka, they're not getting the starts or the you know, goals or assists that they were in previous years, albeit, you know, Jesus has been injured recently, but still, even when he wasn't, he wasn't producing at like last season's level. So yeah, but the guy who is stepping up on that front at the moment is Kai Havertz, so you can see why people would potentially look at him.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I think the other thing that you mentioned about him, obviously he does get a point for the clean sheet. Arsenal kept a lot of those recently. I guess that technically applies to Martin Odegaard as well, who I guess he's guaranteed minutes, isn't really going to be part of much of an Arsenal rotation, but doesn't have the underlying numbers that Havertz has, and is like £1.5 million more expensive almost. So yeah, I think if your money is no object and you're absolutely desperate for a guaranteed starter, and you're looking for, you know, a player from a team that you know, attacks a lot and he's frankly one of the better teams in the league, then I guess you'd go for Odegaard. But in terms of what we look for in the lounge, Andy, it is those underlying numbers and ultimately a cheaper player with higher upside. And I think therefore Kai Havertz is worthy of his place on the fringe of our radar. The other kind of I guess this is a team effort, really, in terms of the final pick on the fringe of our radar. I mean, it's just Crystal Palace assets, Andy. They have a double game week in game week 34. Both of their matches are at home against West Ham and Newcastle. West Ham, again, will be off the back of a Europa League or Europa Conference. No, it was Europa League second leg against Bayer Leverkusen next week, and then obviously Newcastle in the midweek. They're one of only three teams in the double game week 34 with two home games. The other ones are Everton and Wolves. And I think what we've seen under Oliver Glasner makes us think that some Palace assets could be worth a bit of a look. Defensively, they've got reasonably good underlying numbers, Andy. They rank fourth for expected goals conceded, I think, in Glasner's reign, which means that Dean Henderson and Daniel Munoz at 4.4 and 4.5 million, respectively, could be interesting shouts. Munoz has been pretty attacking, or definitely Palace's most attacking defender since he's come in. And obviously Henderson has had to come in with Sam Johnston out for the rest of the season. So, you know, those two look fairly nailed and I guess have some upside ahead of the double. They've also got the usual attacking assets, Eze and Elise, that are both £6 million or under. And then Jean-Philippe Mateta is getting a bit of buzz as well. There's always a Palace forward that's around the £5 million mark that goes on a bit of a run and gets everyone overly excited. And I feel like that it's Mateta's turn, having, you know, it been Edouard and been Ayew, I guess, at various points in the last couple of years. Liverpool away this game week. I guess we're maybe thinking, depending on your strategy, maybe you wouldn't want to do it yet. But if you've got a transfer that you need to use up, having rolled recently, and maybe you've got to go early, and one of these ones is maybe the best way to go.
Well, I think this is the only main reason we're here. Yeah, it's literally the double next week is the reason we're highlighting this at all. I don't think Palace players would have made it on otherwise. But they've got two home games, West Ham and Newcastle, in the double. And yeah, like you said, a key thing is their defensive numbers have been good recently. And they play, obviously, that a wing-back attacking system under Glasner, three at the back. And then, so that's why Munoz has been getting forward so much. So if he's got a decent clean sheet potential in two home games, playing not against, you know, okay, West Ham and Newcastle, so, you know, upper half of the table teams, but still, you know, not necessarily elite of the elite in terms of regularly giving you consistent performances, then yeah, and he's got any time to kind of like attacking upside like a Munoz, then yeah, there seems to be you know, good things to look at as in terms of you're trying to find someone to come in there, and you like me and you don't like the double up in defence in particular. So you want to try and get one of these other teams' assets in. But yeah, just the huge caveat that Liverpool away this game week. So it's not necessarily one we're advocating for starting a Palace player, even if you do bring them in this game week. But yeah, just we thought worth highlighting because we know that there'll be people, certainly we are ourselves, considering. I suppose more so me, if you're in the position where you're not got a free hit next game week, but you've got transfers you need to make sure you use up, then yeah, it's one potentially for stashing on a bench to bring out next week.
Yeah, I mean, I think even on the free hit, you know, I haven't really given, I guess, a draft much thought, but you know, someone like Daniel Munoz or maybe even Dean Henderson as a keeper, depending on how much money I'm left over with and who I'd want to start. You know, I think they could be relatively reasonable assets to at least have in your squad if you are on a free hit. So yeah. And then obviously, you know, we've mentioned, you know, players like Eze and Elise before in terms of what they can bring from an attacking upside. I guess we don't really need to go into it. Eze and Elise, they are, you know, head and shoulders Crystal Palace's two best players, and they're definitely their best two attacking threats. So yeah, with a home double, you know, there's absolutely no reason why they couldn't end up hauling. I think, you know, often with these players, you would kind of end up with a 2-pointer or a 10-pointer, and I feel like it's rarely in between somewhat. But yeah, both obviously have incredible upside, but we don't really see them with particularly great underlying numbers, and Elise in particular is coming back off an injury. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I think they are definitely worth highlighting on the fringe at this stage. Anyone else, Andy, not quite making it onto the radar this game week? I guess looking ahead to get that game week 34. If we get any assurances on minutes, Diogo Jota and Trent Alexander-Arnold have got to be pretty interesting shouts for that double.
Yeah, I mean, for all the reasons we've mentioned, other Liverpool players, I mean, if Jota were to start in a world where, which is possible if he's starting to get minutes back tonight as he has, if you're telling me now Jota's starting both games in game week 34, which obviously we've got no indication of, but just in the hypothetical, I mean, I absolutely would want him. I'd be very worried about not owning him in that double game week otherwise. So, yeah. And so I guess similar goes for Trent. I can imagine him being very popular on free hit because he's probably got enough games now to get some minutes in his legs and maybe get at least one start, if not, and you know, maybe a game and a half, if not two starts in that double. So yeah, for sure. Gonna be popular. So worth us, I guess, highlighting in this anyone else segment now for people to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and looking ahead and thinking, and as I said, I think earlier, minutes monitoring. You've got an interesting 1 week punt, Andy, as well, that I guess isn't enough to make our radar. But yeah, given the Champions League tie being quite finely poised, given some of the rotation that we think we are likely to see from Manchester City, and given that they've got an injury ravaged Luton this weekend, Julian Alvarez feels like an interesting 1 week punt if you are in the luxurious position of being able to bring him in and not having to worry about him for too much longer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it can't be probably maybe not many people who have the free hit and wild card still. So if you're on free hit 34 and then wild card 35, then absolutely this is a guy to be thinking about. But it was more broad than that as well, just in the sense of if for whatever reason you're looking for a 1 week punt from whatever strategy you've got, and it means, yeah, like you say, you're not sort of left with him in future game weeks when he might not start, then it was looking at that City fixture with Luton at home and going, they are typically flat track bullies at home, aren't they? And who, if you can know any of the City starting attackers, they're potentially a great option this week. And he seems, I mean, you never know with Pep, who knows in any given game week, but you'd think Alvarez is got to be one of them, the most likely to be starting, given he only got 3 minutes off the bench in the Bernabeu.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you say, you do not know Pep, and that will nicely segue, Andy, into our next seg, but which we will get to after we've taken a quick break. But when we return, we will be swimming against the tide.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_Lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back then. So swimming against the tide this week, Andy, and obviously we didn't do a honey trap last week, but we can now finally review our honey traps from two game weeks ago. Yours was that a Liverpool player would be the player of the game week. And who was it? Was it Phil Foden in the end? I can't even remember.
Well, I don't really know how this turned out, but Foden had the same amount of points as Cole Palmer, but it was given to Cole Palmer on the official website. There must be like a tiebreaker.
Yeah, there must be of some way, shape or form. Maybe it's minutes played or goals scored or something. I don't know. Bonus, probably knowing FPL, it'll be like the bonus algorithm, something dumb like that. But yeah, okay, well, it wasn't a Liverpool player anyway. So I believe I took you up on that one and escaped with your honey. The one that I put out there was Arsenal and Liverpool to win to nil. You didn't take me, but you should have. But only, I guess, narrowly. I think there was a, what was it? Was it some sort of own goal? Who, I can't even remember.
Yeah, Connor Bradley, kind of brought Connor Bradley own goal against Sheffield United.
Yeah. Bit unfortunate, but yeah.
Other than that, basically, I was right not to take it.
I don't think Sheffield United created a great deal, did they, in the end? So, but there we go. Let's move on, Andy, anyway, to this game week and our swimming against the tide. And yeah, we segued in from a Julian Alvarez 1 week punt to discuss Pep Roulette and how we can't really trust anything that he says. And we definitely can't trust team selections. And maybe that is one of the reasons why we are swimming against Kevin De Bruyne being the second most transferred in player at the time of recording. We swam against Kevin De Bruyne historically, and he has burned us somewhat, but that's not putting us off here, Andy. And I think one of the reasons ultimately is that we just don't know what his minutes will be. He was due to start in the Bernabeu, didn't because of an illness, supposedly throwing up in the dressing room. Obviously, as I said, the second leg at the City Ground is sort of finally in the balance. So Pep is going to want his best players, and Kevin De Bruyne hasn't played many midweek weekend games. Recently, especially this season since he's come back from injury. So whether he is risked at the weekend ahead of a key Champions League game at home against Real Madrid on, I guess it'll be Wednesday, I guess remains to be seen. And I guess you, with that risk, I don't think you'd be wanting to spend 10, 10.5 million pounds or however much he is now in FPL on a transfer when you're just not that sure about him. That said, obviously we understand why there's going to be many transfers in, because he did get 18 points last game week. But yeah, it just feels a bit of a reaction to that, and not really a reaction to thinking about how likely it is that Kevin De Bruyne starts or at least plays a significant number of minutes in this game week.
Well, yeah, we are very scared that obviously we could end up looking silly here. Like if De Bruyne were to start, you could see him going off against Luton, right? That could happen. But the bottom line here is what we're swimming against is for him to be the second most transferred in player. Like, is he the second best option as a transfer in this game week? That feels very difficult to believe when you consider all the other factors, as Chris has just mentioned some. The fact, obviously, City don't double in 34, but the chance of KDB's minutes being managed and... it seems more likely, as Chris said, that it's people sort of jumping on the back of his 18 points and quickly transferring him. And it'd be interesting to see in these stats, like when a lot of those that you know transfers were made. Because when you look at the logic of it, to invest that much money in someone who may not even start this game week, but certainly obviously doesn't double in 34, it seems like an odd move.
Yeah, 10.3 mil, yeah, just a bit rich, I think, for a player that, as we say, you know, could well start, could well return significantly, but yeah, without that start feeling likely, it just feels a one that I definitely wouldn't want to be taking the risk on. And couple that in with, depending on your strategy, the fact that he doesn't double in 34, one to avoid as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, if he does play, I feel like it's almost certain that he'll end up returning, and maybe returning more than once, Andy. So yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that one for next game week. Let's move on to captaincy. And I guess similarly, a minute's risk to KDB is Erling Haaland. And I guess that's why we've got a bit of a question mark over whether he is, I guess, the best captaincy option in the game this game week. I was going to say whether he's a good captaincy option. I guess he almost automatically is a good captaincy option. I've mentioned already, Luton are injury ravaged. They've conceded a lot of goals recently. They do not look like the, I guess, almost sort of swashbuckling team that they perhaps did sort of in the early months of the year. Man City at home, as you said, Andy, I think can be perceived as flat track bullies, could absolutely tear Luton apart this game week. And if they do, Erling Haaland is very, very likely to benefit. But how many minutes will he play? Even if he starts, is he going to get rested when the game is probably, you know, done and dusted after 60? Does that limit his upside? And even then, this is not the Erling Haaland of 22-23. This is an Erling Haaland that is underperforming his XG this season, has only scored 2 goals in City's last 5 Premier League games, and just doesn't look on the eye the player that everyone in FPL kind of fell in love with. So when you've got Mo Salah and Cole Palmer there, both with reasonably good home fixtures as well, you can see why you perhaps want to veer away from the machine this game that, although it looks great on paper, might not be in reality.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he look at the, I mean, at Jump the Wave, obviously predictors for a lot of the teams in Europe, and obviously City being one of those. It seems, you know, from the noises we're hearing to this point at least, that Haaland will start, right? So even if he only plays 60 minutes, 60 minutes at home to Luton is a great goal scoring opportunity for Haaland. And I mean, it's true to say he hasn't looked as great necessarily on the eye, he hasn't been getting as many chances, but he is also, like, the obviously the standards that we hold him to, he is still like third in the league for non-penalty XG over his last six matches. So he's just coming down to a bit more mortal figures, right? And as you sort of mentioned, Luton are kind of injury ravaged at the moment, and you know, you can, it's almost guaranteed City are going to create chances, so it's just who's on the pitch and who's going to have the opportunities to take them, right? And if that's Erling Haaland, he hasn't become a bad finisher overnight. So yeah, you could make an argument that the upside is still as high, if not higher, for him than some of these other options. Although, albeit, yeah, you know, kind of as you're saying, the guarantees for some of these others may be, you know, the floor might be a little bit higher.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, just, yeah, I'm looking at Luton's injury list. It's just awful. You know, they've got just at the back, Gabriel Osho is out, Amari Bell's out, Dan Potts is out, Mad Anderson is out, Tom Lockyer obviously is out, and then not really a defender per se, but Issa Kabore is ineligible to face his parent club as well. You know, I don't think they're going to be starting anyone in their sort of back three, and really their back five, apart from maybe Alfie Doughty, that would have kind of like started the season or been a first choice Luton Town defender or wing back. Yeah, it's not a great position for them to be in, just in general, going into, you know, the back end of the season looking to stay up. But yeah, when you're playing Man City away, yeah, it's going to be really, really, really challenging. And yeah, as you say, you know, there is some upside, some real upside for Erling Haaland. I'm guessing, you know, come the crunch, I'll probably end up putting my armband on him. But I don't feel particularly inspired by any of the shouts this week. It makes me kind of want to go differential. And I think if Diego Jota was still definitely out, you know, I'd be flirting with Luis Diaz quite a lot this week. I think we had a chat off air, Andy, about the Mo Salah eye test is just not as good as it perhaps once was, but his underlying numbers are obviously still great. And yeah, Cole Palmer is great, but he's also stuck, what, 9 penalties away this season, that if he didn't have those, I think we'd be thinking very differently about him as a captaincy shout. So yeah, you can tell by the tone of my voice, and maybe it's the time that we're doing this now, late on a Thursday evening, but yeah, just not feeling particularly inspired by putting my armband on any of these three for it to go potentially horrendously wrong and the other two return heavily. But yeah, I guess Haaland perhaps is the safest pick among these.
Yeah, I mean, you can see a situation where all of their effective ownerships are a problem for you when you don't own, you obviously can't captain them all, right? So yeah, there it will have a swing probably on some ranks this game week who you pick, and any one of them could go off. So I think, you know, Salah probably plays close to 90 minutes. Palmer definitely plays 90 minutes. So, you know, on the balance of upside versus minutes, you could make an argument that Salah edges it over Haaland on that front. But there's only so much like logic and thinking you can apply to these things. Some of it is going to have to be a bit of a gut and a punt a little bit. Obviously, Liverpool have just taken a battering. What will morale be like? Will that cause them to come out fighting? What will it make him more likely to Klopp? That is more likely to like not really worry about sending a good team over in to Italy in the next game week. Who knows?
Yeah. Hard to predict. Anyway, let's leave it there. We could mull that all day, I feel, but I think for me, it's going to be a late Saturday morning decision on where to place my armband. So in that case,
it's worth saying, sorry, that you're right about Palmer as well, though. I think that's an early flag now that he's going to be, I reckon, we're going to call him overpriced at the start of next season, right? Depending on Chelsea's like early season fixture run, but like he's going to be probably somewhere between 7.5-8.5 million, and the penalties are contributing significantly to his returns, and he you can't rely on that, right? And so if you look at his non-penalty underlying numbers, it won't be worth whatever price he start next season at.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess it's just whether you compare him to, I guess, Bukayo Saka, who's also been on penalties, and think, well, it's, you know, I'll take it, and there's still some upside. And you know, I think we really rate him as a player. It's just whether Chelsea can create a few more chances from open play that he can be involved in, I guess, next year. That's going to determine rather whether he's a good FPL asset or not. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we'd already predicted again over text that he's absolutely going to be in that £8 million mark next year. And yeah, I feel like his ownership will not be what it is at the minute, but yeah, it happens a lot. We've seen that with Gabriel Martinelli and I guess Saka before, and Phil Foden in previous years as well. When they get that rise, they're just instantly less appealing. So yeah, we'll see how kind of prominently Cole Palmer features in our FPL long weekend episode on midfielders. Let's move on then. Let's finish, as we always do, with a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is That? Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe, and the other person has to guess who it is. They get 5 clues. If they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points. After the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. Each time they hear a new clue, they have 2 minutes to stick or twist on their previous guess, so we don't reveal the answers to the end, so you can play along wherever you're listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. Andy got 1 point last week, but he still leads 33 points to 28. Looking for the 4P. Is this is the 4P, is it? Yeah, we're retiring this game if you win again. No, I'm not doing it anymore. We'll have to think of something else.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, in that instance, I could say, one, just be better, obviously.
Yeah.
Two, okay, fine, try and come up with one, a game that is as encapsulating and enthralling as Who the Heck Is That?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Fine.
Okay. Bring me solutions, not problems, Chris. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Just give me the off season, and I'll be I'll be doing my best. Mattel, trying to think of a good sort of board game for our podcast. But yeah, it's your turn to pick for me this week. I'm doing the guessing. So yeah, I'll let you take it away whenever you are ready.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you are, because I'm feeling rather sleepy tonight. We are doing this late. Maybe not as late as some shows we've done, but still, I could do with a good sleep. So
I feel quite tired as well, but I'm looking forward to having a bit of a lie-in this weekend. So I guess you don't get a lie-in anymore with a toddler.
Yeah, those days though, that is not an option, unfortunately. Yeah. Every day is a non-lie-in day. So rather than complaining, let's crack on. So clue number one then is this player's 8th season in FPL, and they've already achieved their best ever score.
Eight seasons. I like these. I like these when it's not like 4 and under, which feels like the majority of our FPL clues, or of our Who the Heck Is That clues. 8 seasons, already done their highest ever score. Looking at Newcastle, and that, I can't think of anyone necessarily there, although I guess maybe Anthony Gordon have done a lot of 0 point seasons for Everton. He's like 22, so 8 seasons would have made him 14 when he starts, so that must be a no. Tottenham, I don't think Madison's hit his highest ever. Had a few injuries this year, hasn't he? Son won't have. So no, Brentford probably not. Sheffield United not. Burnley no. Brighton feels like a no for 8 seasons. Man City, Phil Foden springs to mind. Could be on 8, although, again, I think that would have made him 15 when he was first in the game. Luton feels like a no. Forest, a no. Wolves. Ryan Aitnori doesn't strike me as doing 8 years. Bournemouth. Dominic Solanke, maybe. feel like we might have had him before in the game, though. Man United doesn't... No one springs to mind instantly.
You've got 30 seconds.
Liverpool... Mo Salah won't be on for his best season. Normal Trent. Van Dijk... Doesn't feel like it.
10 seconds.
I think I might go Dominic Solanke, Andy. Yes, please.
Okay. Solanke. Clue number two then. This player started this season at his highest ever starting price, 0.5 million more than last year. Who the heck is that?
I mean, I guess on my first clue, I don't know that. I don't know what he started at. I don't really know what he is now. But it feels possible, I guess. Let's keep going through the teams then. Palace, it doesn't feel like there's going to be a higher scoring eight season there. West Ham, Bowen will have had some for Hull. He's always a tricky one to do number of seasons. He had a 200-point season, though. I don't think he's on that at the minute, even though he had a good year. Fulham have been a bit of a damp squib season from an FPL point of view. Arsenal. Jesus probably not got there. Havertz not done eight seasons, nor of the defenders or Raya. Villa, again, Watkins jumps out, but it won't be 8 years for him. Emi Martinez, he had a very good season a few years back, though. I doubt he'll have surpassed that yet.
You've got 30 seconds.
The only team I think I skipped over after Foden was Man City. And I wonder if it's a defender, perhaps. Wouldn't be De Bruyne. Bernardo Silva. Doubt it, but could be.
10 seconds.
I think I'll have to stick with the Solanke, mate, given I'm no further forward. So yeah, I'll stick, please.
Okay, sticking on Dominic Solanke. Clue number three. This player has played in every game this season and started all but one. Who the heck is that?
Realise I'm doing a lot of silence here, which isn't great for the audio medium, but that feels like it could fit in with Dominic Solanke. Why do I recall vaguely he missed a game? I feel like I was in the car listening to it on the radio, and I feel like it might have been Bournemouth Newcastle and he missed it. But how reliable do I think that nugget from my memory is? I mean, he's basically missed the Bournemouth, hasn't he, this year? So, yeah, it might well be. Playing every game, starting every game bar one, implies maybe a goalkeeper or possibly a centre-back. Although it's pretty rare for keepers to be subbed on, isn't it? Unless there's been like a red card. So... maybe not. Going through them again with the teams, you've got Pope, who's been injured too many times. Vicario is not his eighth season, nor is it Fleckens. Brighton for rotated keepers. Edison's missed games. Not Onana's eighth season, nor is it Jose Sarr's, nor is it Neto's. Alisson's missed games. Bringing you back maybe to Martinez. Did you say, sorry, he was $500,000 more in your second clue?
$500,000 more this year than last year.
I don't think that's Martinez.
You've got 30 seconds.
But yeah, I guess it could be a centre-back. But given the time I've got left on this clue, I think I might have to stick with Dominic Solanke, Andy.
Okay, stick with Dominic Solanke. Clue number four then. Two of his teammates in the same position are higher owned than him. Who the heck is Stan?
Dear. Okay, well, that's not him then. Two of his teammates in the same position are higher owned than him. Okay. Do you know what? I think I might know who it is. And I think it's because I considered throwing this player out there to go on the radar. But then I talked myself out of it because I know it's actually quite stupid. And therefore, I think it might be Declan Rice. 8 seasons, I guess just about maybe fits. I think he would have been 5 million pretty much his whole West Ham career. But I'm fairly confident he's 5.5 this year because I was looking at it earlier. Highest finish, I think given the goals he's got this season, would make sense. And his two higher owned teammates, one is obviously Saka, and then I'd assume the other one would be Odegaard in the same position. Who else would have high owned midfielders? I guess Tottenham would. Son, Maddison, and
you've got 30 seconds.
Someone else. Liverpool maybe would. But no one's jumping out to me. I think I'm going to pivot, mate, to Declan Rice.
Yeah.
Rice, baby, please.
Okay, you're going to Rice 10 more seconds.
Yes, please. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, a final clue then on who the heck is stat this week. This player has 11 attacking returns in his first year at his third London club this season, already 4 more than any other previous season.
How many attacking returns?
This player's on 11 attacking returns in his first year at his third London club, already 4 more than any previous seasons.
I mean, feels high, but maybe. At his third London club? That rules him out, doesn't it? Hasn't he just been at West Ham? And then Arsenal? Oh, Jesus.
I mean, okay. If it helps, I would say that he hasn't necessarily made appearances in the league for all three of those London clubs.
Okay. Just throwing it into doubt a lot. No idea. Was he at Chelsea's academy or something stupid? I guess maybe. I know he's good friends with Mason Mount, so maybe that means something. But yeah, beyond that, that's thrown me a little bit. First season for a third London club. I mean, it's his first season for a London club. It's also James Maddison's first season for a London club, but he hasn't played for another one.
You have got 30 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. Chelsea. Yeah. Sterling. Palmer doesn't think that applies to them. I think I'll have to stick with Rice. But yeah, that final clue has thrown me. But yeah, at this point, it's 2 points or zero, isn't it? So. Yeah, I will stick, right, I think.
Okay, well, your time is up. So, yeah, good. You are sticking with some sticky rice.
Yeah, and sticky rice.
That was a good move to do because I didn't quite mean to throw you so much with the final clue, but it is Declan Rice. Yeah, I thought, you know, he was famously/infamously at the Chelsea Academy. That is why he's good mates with Mason Mount.
Yeah, okay.
Before he got rejected and picked up by West Ham. So, yeah, but I suppose he probably didn't make any senior appearances for Chelsea. So perhaps that was a a bad move on my front, chucking that in there. I just thought it was an interesting wrinkle. Yeah, that he seems to only play for London clubs, obviously. Likes being near his mum and dad, bless him. But yeah, the other point in that clue being as well, he has significantly more attacking returns than any other previous season, and that fits with the kind of slightly freer role. He's been given a bit more license to go forward, hasn't he? Yeah, 6 goals, 5 assists, which is both his highest goals and joint highest assists total ever in the league. So, and obviously we're still with a few games to go. So yeah, played in every game, started all but one, is the exact price that you said. I mean, it did come out a little bit out of nowhere on clue four that you suddenly thought of him. But if you'd been looking at him previously, that was a huge slice of luck.
It absolutely was. I mean, I think looking back at my first season, I got a 5-pointer because the clue that you first went with, I'd been looking at, I think it was Jorginho, and I'd been looking at him, and it just so happened that, like, I'd looked at that stat. So yeah, a huge slice of luck here, I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, as soon as you said that fourth clue, it just felt fairly, well, I felt confident that it was going to be him, because yeah, like when I saw that you put Havertz on our sheet earlier, I was like, well, Rice has got more points than him. I know he's not going to have the underlying numbers, but he's like guaranteed to start, and he can crash the box. So yeah, why, maybe worth a punt at 5.5 mil, but yeah, that was, I'm not going to lie, that was a huge bit of luck, because I don't think, had I not looked at him earlier, I would have got to him.
Yeah, well, that is just how the cookie crumbles sometimes, though, isn't it? And I think, yeah, I did wonder whether, again, putting that clue in would, I mean, end up helping you, but you wouldn't necessarily, if you were asked about ownership of Arsenal midfielders, I guess you would probably, as you did, go Saka, Odegaard, but then maybe you'd think Havertz was next, or Martinelli maybe even from
definitely
earlier in the season or something. You probably wouldn't have thought Rice straight away. So, but there you go. Anyway, two points, so a respectable score.
Yeah, great stuff. I'll take that. Yeah, feel quite relieved, I guess, in some respects. But yeah, I feel like some of them early clues. How, like, were you looking at Solanke at any point when I was saying him and thinking, oh shit, I might be.
I did, yeah, because he does fit a lot of them. It is his eighth season, although three seasons he got registered no minutes in. So
right,
that feel for Solanke, that is not Rice. So that feels a bit.
Yeah.
But it technically would be his eighth season in the game. He is on his best ever score as well. He did start this season at his highest ever starting price, which was $500,000 more than last season's starting price. So but I obviously, you know, I knew that later clues were gonna rule him out, so it wasn't going to be one of those, what was it we had in the past, Robertson, yeah, Van Dijk situations,
yeah,
where almost everything was identical. Yeah,
I mean, he started all games. So my hazy memory of a Newcastle game in the car where he didn't play was incorrect. In fact, he got a goal and assist that day. So clearly I didn't remember the game very well. But yeah, interesting that, yeah, the first couple of clues did apply for him. But yeah, obviously the London clubs definitely wouldn't have done. Anyway, let's leave it there, Andy. Let's bring this one home. But yeah, if our listeners have any questions ahead of game week 33 and ahead of the deadline, including maybe who to captain, how can they get in touch?
They can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at @FPL_lounge. And yeah, a close one for captaincy this week. So if you've got any pearls of wisdom, do send them our way, because it can be tricky to pick between. And, you know, we're only two simple men with our own thoughts and opinions trying to help you pick between. And maybe we don't know best. Maybe you do. So let us know.
Yeah, any insight that you want to glean towards us, then yeah, absolutely let us know. And whilst you're at it, do rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. We will be back then next week ahead of double game week 34. Yeah, it will be a normal pod and normal schedule. So Andy, until then,
thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.